And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this?
A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy!
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds!
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Metrospective presented by Topps. Check out Topps Project 70 celebrating 70 years of Topps baseball cards. I'm Ted Berg, joined as always in Zoom conference by the Athletics Mets beat writer Tim Britton. Tim, the Mets take 2 out of 4 from the Padres and come out within the last two following two excellent pitching performances, a typically dominant outing from Jacob deGrom, throwing only 85 pitches over 7 innings, shutting down the Padres, and then Marcus Stroman, a little bit more wild than we're accustomed to, but nonetheless doing the work, beating the Padres on Sunday. You have to be feeling good about where this team is right now.
It is funny how, especially, you know, those 4-game series, it really is how you feel about them really depends on like the order of the proceedings. Mm-hmm. Like if the Mets had gone in and won the first two in San Diego and they're 4-1 on the road trip and then they lost the last two, you would have been like, oh man, real opportunity missed.
Right.
But because they did it the other way, they lost the first two, lost two close games, the first two to Yu Darvish and Blake Snell. And then they came back and won the next two. That you feel really good about where this team is. They're 4-3 on the road trip. If as long as they win one game in Baltimore, which you sure hope they can do against a team that's been really struggling. You have a winning road trip. Any winning road trip is good, especially a 3-city one that included a stop at one of the teams that's doing the best in baseball. And you know, I thought that was a series that kind of validated your idea of how good the Mets could be, in the sense mm-hmm. that like the games were tight and well played and close for the most part. Like it was, you know, it's one thing to go to split a 4-game series where you win 2-1 twice and you lose 9-0 the other two. You know, they lost, I think, was it by 1 run, by 2 runs, and then they win a couple of closer games, including the 6-2 one on Sunday. They, you know, that seemed like it was the first time they'd played a good team in a while, or the first time they played a team that we knew was really good, probably since Tampa. And even then, Tampa, that was the start of their 30-game winning streak. So to see the Mets play that well against a team that we know, that we expected going into the season is going to be good, that had played very well so far this season, kind of made you think, okay, this is a team that the Mets should be a team that can contend in the National League this season.
And I think it's really, I don't want to say refreshing, because I don't, that suggests that there was freshness in the Mets offense early in the season, and it's not. It is nice to see what this team looks like, even still with all the injuries, even with Conforto and McNeil and Nimmo out. When Dominic Smith and James McCann and Francisco Lindor start hitting, all of a sudden, a lot of these offensive issues and really a lot of these injury issues seem to fall to the wayside. Because, and you know, this is a tiny sample. It's, you know, it's just don't take this as a predictor necessarily, except that all of those guys have track records as major league hitters in June, which is, you know, 6 games so far for the Mets. Dom Smith, 375 batting average, 1272 OPS. James McCann, 333 batting average, 1222 OPS. Francisco Lindor, 346 batting average, 986 OPS. Again, small samples, but just an indication. These guys are hitting. That is a big part of the lineup we expected at the beginning of the season and ultimately never felt like we got. Now you're starting to see some depth in this offense, and it makes you think they might start winning some of these Lucchese and Peterson-type starts.
Yeah, like once you know, we talked about it last time that in Arizona you started to see the most important parts of that lineup, the guys who've been there for who've been healthy all year but haven't been hitting in Smith, McCann, and Lindor. They were starting to percolate and starting to come around. Lindor in particular, that was a really important development for, as he joked the other day, kind of it would be nice to get home and maybe not get booed this time. That the lineup has been more like major league representative than it had been previously. You've got Pete Alonso back as well, and you know his June numbers are not quite as sparkling, but still it helps to have him back. He drove in quite a few runs his first couple games back at the end of May. And then, you know, like a guy like Billy McKinney has come in and done fine. Like, you know, there's a big difference between the like
better than fine. He's been great. He's been great. He's like an extra base hit machine.
You know, your heroes in the course of a 162 game season are not just the guys who are good for 160 games. It's also guys who are good for the right stretch of like 10 or 12 games when you really need them to be. You know, even if, like, I don't know what's going to happen over the next couple of weeks with the Mets outfield when Nimmo returns, like how long they need Billy McKinney to be, a fifth or sixth hitter in their lineup. But that he's done this so far has really helped them during a time where they really needed it. In the same way that, like, Tomas Nito's brief hot stretch, you know, he's kind of fallen back to earth a little bit. Was at a time where the team really needed someone to be that good for them in the middle of their lineup, and Nito had stepped up at that time. That's the kind of, those are the kinds of under the radar heroes that you might forget about by September 30th when you're talking about a pennant race or a playoff series. But those guys help keep you afloat and help you avoid some of the longer lulls over the course of a season because they were there at the right time.
Yeah, I would say that regardless of if Billy McKinney winds up on the Mets postseason roster, Billy McKinney has earned his World Series ring at this point.
Yeah, what do you think the design for the Mets World Series ring would look like? Do we want to talk about that, or is it a little too early to get into that?
I mean, I think that you just have to make it like an all diamond likeness of Jacob DeGrom, right? there's not even a Mets logo on there. You just look at the ring and it's like Jacob DeGrom's face made out of like a 0.62 carat diamonds or something, you know? I can't imagine. It wouldn't just be like congratulations to Jacob DeGrom and 25 other guys on winning the World Series.
That sounds about right based off of Saturday's performance.
It's a little bit of controversy, an unfortunate controversy, and I think kind of silly controversy stemming from that one. This is going to happen now. This is a thing. Major League Baseball has made clear that it will no longer tolerate starting pitchers, of all pitchers, using foreign substances to enhance their grips on baseball. Now, this is something that has been happening for at least a decade. And I was going to say an open secret, but I don't even think it's a secret. Like I remember this happening in the 2013 World Series. And at that point, both Mike Matheny and John Farrell being like, yeah, it's the thing that happens. I believe there was video of Clay Buchholz at one point spraying himself down with sunscreen in a game in Toronto with the roof closed. It came up again in the 2018 World Series between the Red Sox and the Astros. Neither team would escape that one unscathed with its reputation, but not for pine tar. It was Matt Barnes in one of those games there had like very clearly had pine tar on his arm. And both AJ Hinch and Alex Cora were like, yeah, I don't care. No one cares. This has been a something that, I think if you ask a lot of hitters in Major League Baseball, until, you know, at least recently, now that we have some indication that enhancing grip can enhance spin and as such makes the pitchers more effective, before that, hitters were okay with it because they said, this guy's throwing 101. I'd rather he have some control of where it's going. And so if he needs a little bit of pine tar, then it's okay. Now, Jacob DeGrom was just adjusting his belt at one point in the game, and some Twitter sleuths clipped video of it and said like, oh, here is Jacob DeGrom using foreign substances, and you won't hear about this one, because as though there's like some conspiracy to protect the Mets' reputation. Like, that's a thing that might exist. Like, you're only going to hear about Bauer and Cole and not Jacob deGrom because no one would ever go after the pristine Mets like that. But what was interesting about this was the incredible support that came from deGrom's teammates to a man. Basically, every Met who is in any way active on Twitter came out and said, like, no, I know for a fact he does not use anything to enhance his grip. And, you know, we've come to doubt, I think, understandably, statements from Major League Baseball players or professional athletes in general when they pertain to things that could be perceived as cheating. And again, I would say this is even if it's happening with DeGrom or with, I mean, it's certainly happening with someone on the Mets, because I think that, you know, the estimates have been that 70 to 75% of pitchers are using something to enhance their grip. So I wouldn't call this cheating. I would just say it's a thing that a rule that the league is in the process of changing and never enforced before. But it sure sounds like DeGrom's not doing it, at least based on how adamant his catchers and many of his pitching teammates were, almost to the extent that it made me wonder if it's like a curiosity that Jacob deGrom doesn't use something to enhance his grip.
Yeah, it's funny. Like, you can go back to, I mean, you said 13 and 18. You can go back to like 2006. Remember the smudge on Kenny Rogers' palm that postseason?
All too well. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, this is the kind of atmosphere that Major League Baseball has created by... I guess ignoring the problem for long enough that it gained the pervasive traction among pitchers, and obviously Trevor Bauer has been very, very big in bringing it to the forefront of the public consciousness, and then saying kind of in vague terms like that we're going to crack down on this by kind of doing like this amateur sleuthing of like checking Baseball Savant's spin rates. Which right. is something that anyone can do, and that I think it's difficult to know like what is a meaningful jump in spin rate. You know, like Bauer with in late 2019 with Cincinnati had like the one start or the experimental inning or something where his
he said he was going to do it.
Basically, you know,
he tweeted that I'm about to do this thing and then like watch me do it, and then it happened.
Right. And then continued that through last season. DeGrom, if you look at his fastball spin rates over time, he has gotten more spin on his fastball. 2021 is behind 2020 so far. His last two starts this year have been his ones with the highest spin rate, but they haven't been these enormous, you know, they've been within what is, in my understanding, like a reasonable range of spin. I think it's interesting, like from 2017 to 2018, he had the exact same spin on his four-seam spin rate, his four-seamer, and that's over the course of, you know, 1,250, 1,300 fastballs. They ended up with the exact same average spin rate. And that was the year he took his big leap, you know, in 2018. So I don't think there's the kind of there's this kind of smoke there with him, at least via Baseball Savant sleuthing that the sport seems to be promoting, that there would be with some other players. You know, it'll be interesting to see not just with DeGrom, but with any Mets player, now that we hear baseball is looking into it kind of more deeply and thinking of cracking down in the near term. How those spin rates change going forward. We've already seen some players, you know, Bauer, for instance, in his latest start, his spin rate was down 200 mm-hmm. revolutions per minute after being up 300 to 400 for a few years now. So that'll be worth monitoring a little bit. But you're going to get a bunch of Twitter moments like last night's and like the one that you know, with the Padres and Yu Darvish, where everyone is going to look at every little place a pitcher puts his hand while, you know, before he throws a pitch. And is it to get a substance on there that is something beyond, you know, the kind of bullfrog sunscreen and rosin that I think most pitchers and most hitters would be okay with, because it's hard to regulate sunscreen. I remember
you can't regulate sunscreen. Guys have to play. There's no shade on the pitcher's mound. You right. You can't just be like, go get burned. You can't do that.
I remember the Buchholz one happening in the closed Rogers Center. That was during his like incredible run to start the 09 season, where he looked kind of the way DeGrom does now for a brief period of time. And Jack Morris in particular taking offense at that. But, you know, I think Eno Saris at The Athletic has written really well about this for a while now, that, you know, it's something beyond sunscreen and rosin, which is what guys have been using for a long time. It's something even beyond like pine tar. It's things like, what was it? Spider Tech Grip or something like that.
Spider Tech.
You know, the kinds of things you could see on like an infomercial where they're showing a guy picking up a cement block without like just sticking his hand down on it. That's the kind of stuff that some people are using and is allowing, you know, just better manipulation of the baseball. You know, you talk about some great pitchers over time, like DeGrom has such long fingers, the same way Pedro Martinez had really long fingers, which allows him to manipulate the baseball in different ways. And that's something that other pitchers who don't have those kind of genetic advantages and physical advantages are able to achieve through foreign substances. It's going to be a main topic of conversation in the sport, really probably for the rest of this season. And we'll see how Major League Baseball handles it and if they handle it any better than they have to this point.
Yeah, I am reminded of, I think it was at the beginning of the 2017 season, a pitch that bounced and was blocked by Yadier Molina and stuck to his chest protector. I, you know, I have some familiarity with pine tar and rosin and sunscreen. I don't think any of those things are going to get a baseball to just stick on its own to the chest protector.
Like, I'm waiting for the time a guy makes contact with the baseball and it just sticks to the bat. Like, that's what I want to see.
So that's, you know, and I remember reading about this in the context, this is sort of off topic, but in the context of the George Brett pine tar home run, that there actually is an advantage to having your bat be very sticky on the barrel, because even if it's a split second that there is more friction or whatever, like keeping the bat and ball in contact, it will increase the, I don't think that at the time I read this, that exit velocity was a term yet, but you will in theory hit the ball harder if your bat's a little stickier. So, you know, I don't know why you wouldn't be spider tacking your bat.
It is amazing to me how much I regret not like caring more about physics now that I'm a baseball writer. That's, you know, yeah. I knew that I would always regret not like keeping up with my Spanish, and that has obviously,
that's my biggest regret. Yeah, go on.
Like I'd be better at this job if I spoke Spanish, but also
infinitely better. But yeah,
I'd be better at this job if I understood a lot more about physics than I remember from my AP physics class junior year of high school, in which I took it and I never thought about it again.
Yeah, I'm right with you there. Especially now that people are like, it's like every week there's a new word for a baseball thing that like Magnus spin or something, right? Like they're, you know, and like they're like, I don't know. I feel like if I were a younger man and still hungry for this information, I would seek it out. At my age, I'm just like, you know, there's probably something to this, and like this is for smarter people to figure out. Because right. I'll just watch the baseball. I'm sure whatever Jacob DeGrom's doing is working. Everyone should try to do that.
Yeah, that's. I was so happy to finish my physics career in high school. Same with chemistry. Bio was fine. Physics and chemistry, no.
I came very close to failing bio my senior year of high school. I didn't do any of my labs, but that's a, you know, and then I believe I covered my science requirement in college with like animal behavior and astronomy. And astronomy was an 8 a.m. lecture in the dark. And so every single person in the class would just be asleep for the entire thing.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
We have a question from Corey, and it's and pertains to some of the things we've spoken about today. Corey emailed to ask, now that we're in June and pretty much all proven wrong about the Mets bullpen. I should have read the introduction to his email. He said, Ted, at the start of the season, you, Tim, and basically all of us thought the bullpen was going to be this team's Achilles heel. Now that we're in June and pretty much all proven wrong. I would pump the brakes on saying proven. There's a lot of time for this bullpen to go awry, but Corey wants to know, do we need to talk about Jeremy Hefner being maybe a phenomenal coach? I always liked him as a player, but I also do not know how much influence a pitching coach really has. Our staff is performing up and down the roster. Doesn't that at least have something to do with him? Tim, you tell me because I can't answer this question. I don't know.
Yeah, like I think, when the Mets hired Jeremy Hefner, he had gotten such good reviews from pitchers in Minnesota for his work with them when he was their bullpen coach. And I remember going to Twins camp in the spring of 2020 and talking to a bunch of them, including Trevor May, who had great things to say about Jeremy Hefner then. And just the way he's able to work with you and instill confidence in the pitcher you want to be and kind of speaks your language, whether it's if you're a guy like May who is really into analytics, Hefner can do a deep dive with you. If there are some other guys who aren't as into analytics, and he can meet you at that level as well. I think in his first season, I talked to Hefner just the other day, and we were talking about Robert Gsellman a little bit, and he said, that they had seen some things with Gsellman last year, and they wondered, Gsellman is a sinker ball pitcher, could he work as a guy who also threw a four seamer up in the zone with a curveball? Gsellman pitches kind of like a classic 1990s, early 2000s pitcher. Can he pitch more like a 2020 pitcher up in the zone with, changing eye levels and pitching more north-south than just east-west? And they tried to implement those changes and didn't really work. 2020 in particular being a difficult year to implement changes for anyone just because of the stops and starts, because of the condensed season, that there just wasn't a lot of innings for a guy to work through something. You didn't have a normal spring training for that to happen. With Gsellman, with Steven Matz, who Hefner and the Mets were trying to do some pretty significant changes with in terms of his repertoire, those things did not work as well as planned. They were, obviously for those guys in 2020. It was kind of, at least in terms of Gsellman, it was like back to the drawing board. Okay, how can we make him better at what he's already good at? Which is that east-west movement that's getting his sinker back in the proper spot and kind of ditching that four-seam fastball for Gsellman allows him to find the arm slot that he's best at with that two-seam fastball. Two seams and four seams are very difficult to throw both really well, and some Mets are able to do it, Taijuan Walker chief among them. But Gsellman is better now because he's the kind of being the guy that he was in 2016 and to an extent at times in 2018 and 2019 for the Mets, and without worrying about that other stuff. And I think that speaks to Hefner's adaptability as a coach, that he's not just thinking like, well, this is the way you're going to succeed, and it didn't work last year, let's try it again harder this year. It's finding what works for a guy and what makes him most comfortable.
Yeah, I also say to Corey's point that Hefner was a guy that I also, by the standards of like the sort of like middle of the road type starters the Mets had in those years when they went through a lot of them. I think Hefner was a guy a lot of people really liked watching pitch. He he had the feel of a guy who would someday be a good pitching coach, in that he didn't really have overpowering stuff by any stretch of the imagination, but he threw a bunch of different pitches. He largely threw strikes, and he was, he gave you the feeling of a guy who was doing every single thing he could to win those games. And, you know, there are physical limitations on all pitchers, but he wasn't a guy who was going to blow his, 98 past anybody, but nonetheless, a guy who pitched some really good games for the Mets. So I don't know what his relationship is like. I haven't been in the room since Hefner has been the Mets pitching coach, but I hope he's a good pitching coach. It would be cool if the Mets have found like their Leo Mazzoni and they could just park him rocking back and forth on the bench next to Luis Rojas for the next 40 years or whatever it is.
Yeah, and I think it's important to remember with pitching coaches, with hitting coaches, that you can be really good with some members of the roster and struggle more with other members of the roster. Like you go to when Dave Eiland was the Mets pitching coach. Like Dave Eiland was great with Jacob DeGrom and Zach Wheeler. You look at what those two guys have done since they started working with Eiland in 2018, where they made some small adjustments to their mechanics in that spring. It took Wheeler a longer time to adapt to them than it took DeGrom, and they just took off. Like they have two of the, DeGrom has been the best pitcher in baseball since then. Wheeler, I think you can make a case, has been the best, a top 10 pitcher since then, and certainly mm-hmm. he's been, by wins above replacement, like a top 5 pitcher in baseball since the start of 2020. But Eiland didn't have the same kind of great progressive relationship with Noah Syndergaard, where he kept getting better and better. Syndergaard struggled a little bit more in 18 and 19 with Eiland, and they just didn't kind of meet at the same level as the other guys did. So, different styles work for different pitchers, for different hitters. And as adaptable as you may be, there's probably still a guy or two on your team that you're not connecting with entirely the way you do with the other guys. But with Hefner to this point, as much as, I feel like I say this every time we do this, like in so much as I can figure out, which is not the same as a normal level, access is changing for us moving forward. I think starting today and starting in that series in Baltimore, we'll see how it goes. We're allowed to talk to players on the field before the game. I think Hefner does have a strong relationship. You hear players bring him up kind of unsolicited at times. You hear Luis Rojas talk about how he helps him all the time. So I think it is a case of a pitching coach, a young, relatively inexperienced pitching coach when the Mets hired him, growing into that role a little bit more in a second year that clearly the circumstances surrounding it are easier than that first year.
I guess if you wanted to go back to Rick Peterson, you could say that, some pitchers would do best driving fancy Italian sports cars, and other pitchers might prefer driving, big American luxury cars. And, so some pitching coaches are going to be a Maserati, and the Maserati drivers among the pitching staff will flourish, whereas other pitching coaches are a Cadillac and best serve those American luxury car drivers among the pitchers, or something. Some sort of extremely long metaphor for Rick Peterson's tenure as a Mets pitching coach.
Congratulations on bringing up Rick Peterson and not mentioning the name of a certain former Devil Rays pitcher who he is forever tied to in Mets history and cannot escape.
There's two that former Devil Rays pitchers that he's tied to, right? One on either side of the trade. One in the news yesterday, for unfortunate reasons, but Scott Kazmir DFA'd by the San Francisco Giants. Still pitching, Scott Kazmir traded away for Victor Zambrano. I'm actually I'm joining a different podcast later tonight where they watch old games and old Mets games and talk about them. And the game we're watching is one from 2005. So I have been spending a lot of time looking at the 2005 Mets roster and remembering that was like Victor Zambrano's one full season in the Mets rotation. Have you ever spoken to Rick Peterson?
No, I haven't.
He will talk to you. He is an interesting guy. He is a very interesting guy. And if you ever get the opportunity to talk to him, I would say definitely do it, and definitely leave like the next hour and a half open.
That's still,
but that, you will get some stories. You will get some stories.
That is preferable to the other kind of talker in baseball, the guy who doesn't say anything. You know, you can ask 9 questions in a minute and a half, the way I have in several interviews.
I don't even know that you need to ask Rick Peterson a question. Just turn on the recorder and put it in front of him, and he will go.
You know, I'm looking at Victor Zambrano's stats here. He pitched way more for the 05 Mets than I remember. Like, he qualified for the ERA title, made 27 starts. Decent starts. The ERA plus was 99. I remember hating every part of that trade from the minute it was rumored in 2004.
It was like the rare deal where it's like, this deal was clearly horrible at the time. It was horrible in retrospect. It's hard. Like, everybody knew. I mean, Scott Kazmir was better than Victor Zambrano at the time of the trade. He was just younger, right? And it was like everybody knew that Kazmir was even if they were down on Kazmir because of what the music he wanted to play in the clubhouse or whatever else, you could get more. You just had to be able to get more. It's still very frustrating. I happened to be at the game, and it's something I'll never forget. And it's something I've seen a couple of times since, and it's actually a really sort of a sad thing to think about. But I was at the game when Victor Zambrano threw a pitch and then just ran off the mound because he knew he had torn his UCL, I think. And it's sort of unfortunate. But being at the game when you don't hear the broadcast, we were like, what the heck just happened? Like, he just threw a pitch and just jogged right off the field. Like, he knew he was done, which can't be a good feeling. And I don't know if that was in the beginning of 2006 or the end of 2005, and then 2006 was his return, but whatever it was like an experience I will never forget. I remember like sitting in the mezzanine level at Shea Stadium and watching it happen.
2005 Mets, third in the National League in ERA behind Pedro Martinez, Tom Glavine, Chris Benson, Victor Zambrano, and Jae Young So, more than Kazuo Ishii. Ishii was not very good for them early that season, and So was really good for them second half. I do not remember that team being that good a pitching team. I remember Pedro, but that was about it.
Aaron Heilman, also very good for that team.
Was that
speaking of names that Mets fans don't want to hear?
I remember Aaron Heilman's. That was the year he threw the one hitter, right? Early in the season?
I believe so. Yeah.
Because that was, I was visiting colleges. So I was spending the night at Princeton University that night in April of 2005. That was my senior year. And I remember being like, wait, Aaron Heilman threw what? I missed that game?
I don't know. I was going to make some sort of elitism joke about Princeton, but, you know. Whatever. I didn't want to go to that jerk school for jerks anyway, I guess is my point. Tim, we should probably wrap up. If you have a question for the Metrospective podcast, please do ask it of us. We would love to answer it on the air. Tim is on Twitter at Tim Britton. I am at OG Ted Berg. You can email me a question at asktedberg@gmail.com. If you enjoy the podcast, please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts and everywhere else. We appreciate your time and your listening, and we appreciate the Mets coming into their series in Baltimore, where I believe, I don't want to scoop anything, but one of us will be on hand.
Yeah, I'll actually be in Baltimore at Camden Yards, one of my favorite ballparks. First road games in person since the very start of last season. I went to the two games at Fenway last year. But it'll be nice to be in person, and we'll see. Hopefully I am able to actually speak face to face with a Major League Baseball player for the first time in 16 months. I would appreciate, 15 months. That would be nice. I've got my fingers crossed that happens.
Well, best of luck, and I can't wait to hear about it later in the week. Tim, peace out.
Adios.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.